your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Our chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield.
Well, I tell you what, Charlotte, there's a lot going on in Washington, D.C., isn't there?
Yes, there is.
I tell you, there's all kinds of scandals left and right. And we've been staying on
corruption.
Top of this. Yeah, actually, Sean Hannity with Fox News Network has been probably following this along with, you know, he's got two amazing reporters that come on, Sarah Carter and John Solomon, okay? And then he has a staff of legal advisors, and he also brings in some Democratic leaders, you know, activists and former campaign managers of all kinds of different Democratic, you know what I mean, campaigns and that are, you know, aficionados of politics in Washington, D.C. So he has quite an interesting, you know what I mean, a view of this. And we're going to end the program with his latest broadcast about 4 or 5 minutes at the end of the program here. But anyway, to start it off, there's a, if you'll look on The Secret Truth, you'll find a click off, and it's the conservativetreehouse.com. And it's entitled The Evidence Inside the House Intel Committee, page 4, FISA memo. Now, I don't know if you followed this lately, but Alex Jones has come up with by way of a former NSA whistleblower, William Benny. He was head of the technology department at NSA, and he also sent over to Alex a special 99-page document. And that document is about 10% redacted. But what everyone is saying, and then let's get back and just make a comment first on this 4-page FISA memo. Nunes, head of the co-chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, has been secretly, along with two other men, Goodlaw, and a third person, in bringing together investigative powers, and also I believe he got some help from the White House. But what they've done is they put together quite a document regime, and also they distilled it down into what they call a 4-page FISA memo. Now FISA is a FISA court, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act is what FISA means. But there's also a court that supervises and looks over, overviews any request made by anyone inside the government to provide them with intelligence from NSA intercepts. Now, the NSA was set up primarily, it had a foreign mission originally. But many of the critics of the NSA today are saying that much of that technology and capability is being turned inward. Now, when I was in West Berlin doing Army intelligence work, we worked for the NSA, and that was our immediate boss. So I go way back into about 1963, 64, and 65, when working under NSA, you know what I mean, supervision with the Army, okay? But I wound up, you know, in West Berlin, so I just wanted to tell our listening audience that this is not coming from someone that's totally ignorant. We were up against the East German secret police at the time, breaking their codes, listening to their phone calls, and really doing this a good service for this country. But anyway, let's get back to what's going on today. we've got this four-page memo that was a distillation of a lot of different documents, and also they're saying now that from this 99-page document that's just recently serviced from William Binney, the redacted portions out of that document are basically in plain written form in this four-page FISA memo. See, there was an unmasking scandal, too, involved in this whole series of different scandals. There's been about six or eight different major scandals involved with different parties and different groups, you could say, over the last 4, 5, 6 years. Well, actually, you have to go back to Uranium One as being one of the earlier scandals. But anyway, this document, if you go in to our listening audience and go to the conservativetreehouse.com, you can find this very, very in-depth, I'd say. Is it one of the better documents you've seen, Charlotte, on the web and so forth?
Oh, yeah, very well done, very well put together. It's a good read. It's education.
Yes, it is. It talks about the Russian dossier.
But it's a lot to chew on.
Yeah, it's not an easy subject, and tonight we're just going to be generalizing in many ways on this subject, because it's not an easy subject to even deal with. Because for one thing, there's so many different scandals involved in this. See, this goes back to the Clinton Foundation, and it also goes back to Uranium One. Well, let's talk just a little bit about Uranium One first, Charlotte. Okay.
Okay.
Uranium One was originally a Canadian company founded in Canada, and the founders had a very close relationship with the Clinton Foundation. But later on, they would acquire interest in this country of about 20% of our uranium mining interest and capability of mining here in this state, in the United States. Soon after that, several years after that, the Russians, they had an interest. It surfaced that they were interested in buying part of Uranium One. But they have to get permission from the United States government to do that. Their proposal was to buy only 19% interest in Uranium One, and thus they would acquire an interest in some of our uranium resources here in this country. Well, Hillary was the top chairman of the board that approved that purchase. So that was the first step that was approved by the special committee that has to approve foreign purchases of resources here in this country that are considered to be national security risk or national security questions, okay? And we don't normally let anyone foreign interest buy anything like that in the normal sense. It's unprecedented. But anyway, this 19% of Uranium One was purchased, okay? The next step was that the Russians, through a front company, they were doing this through a front organization of buying these interests. They stepped up and purchased 51-52% of Uranium One, which acquired a majority interest in that company and controlling interest. Well, before that happened, Uranium One had acquired two very productive mines in Kazakhstan. Okay? These mines were some of the highest ore content for uranium in Kazakhstan, and Uranium One at that time acquired a 50% interest in two of these mines. This was before the Russians moved in and acquired up to 51-52% of Uranium One at that time. So they gained control, and what I maintain is that all of these reporters are concentrating on the 20% of our uranium here in this country the Russians had controlling interest of, prohibited from exporting any of that uranium out of this country, which did not that happen, that was not respected, that was violated. But anyway, later on, the Russians would eventually control all of Uranium One. And just for our listening audience, if you go out there on the web and go in to Uranium One site, it right now is one of the largest mining companies of uranium and processing companies of uranium in the world. So the Russians have begun to become very dominant in supplying uranium worldwide through this Uranium One interest. And today they totally own Uranium One outright. It's considered to be a governmental type of corporation. That's one thing to start with. Then we get into the election that is being portrayed, and they're portraying Trump in all kinds of derogatory ways, and they created this idea that Trump was colluding with the Russians. Okay, well, we have information now and evidence that what was going on was that there was an unmasking thing going on by Samantha Power and Susan Rice, and they were making quite a few inquiries. In fact, Samantha Power was making one inquiry a day and unmasking the names on the intelligence she received from the NSA. So the way it works is that this FISA court, you have to go into FISA court with evidence of as to who you want to receive information from and start receiving their intercepts, okay? And the FISA court will review your request, and then they'll come back and either give you permission to go in and start querying the NSA database for the information that you requested with permission provided by the FISA court. Okay? Well, the first time that these groups out there were trying to find out information, more and more information about Trump, and trying to uncover any, if any at all, his collusion with the Russians behind the scenes and trying to throw this election. And so they went in with what they call the dossier, the Steele dossier, which was a Russian dossier that was created by GPS Fusion Company. And that man has been in there now testifying before Congress. Fusion GPS is the name of that. His name is Simpson. And it's a quagmire of different personalities here, but the FISA scandal is beginning to be uncovered now, and the procedure what they used was if the evidence that they presented to the FISA court to secure wiretap power, you could say, or intercept permission, was known to them to be false or was created in mind intentionally to provide, to gain that access, then there's a lot of other violations there. Okay? That's just, it goes on and on. In addition to this, this Peter Schrock, FBI, he was head of counterintelligence, and he, along with Lisa Page, who they had developed a relationship with later, and she was an attorney for, that represented that counterintelligence division in the FBI. We're talking about the FBI now. But Peter Strzok, his emails now are becoming available at first. And here's something that was really, really quirky. Was there was about a five-month period in there of text messages on their phones between the two that the FBI just announced a week or so ago that they lost them, that there was a glitch, that there was a technical glitch, and they couldn't recover those text messages. Well, what popped up with the Inspector General that's also looking into several of these different problems that are still ongoing and unresolved at this time, recovered those from their phones. He went out and got their phones, and he recovered that with forensics. When you erase stuff off of phones and stuff these days, it doesn't always go away. They're embedded in there. And so the Inspector General, who is also pursuing investigatory type of capability on several of these issues, did recover these text messages, and those are becoming very incriminating for not only Lisa Page but Peter Strzok. And it talks about them having meetings and planning on what they were going to do to deny Trump the White House and to go against him. That's just another tip of the iceberg. You have that ongoing all the time. You have, like I said before, you have the Uranium One thing that continue to go on. And now there's a debate about how to release this FISA memo, this four-page FISA memo, okay? And what happens on that, basically, is that the House Intelligence Committee has to meet, and they're slated to meet sometime next week. Trump is back in the White House. He's going to make a an address to a House and Senate, you know, speech, a State of the Union address Tuesday. And we feel like sometime after Tuesday, the House Intelligence Committee will meet sometime in there and authorize that this four-page memo will be released to the public. I want everything that like that released so we can look at it ourselves. So neither side, neither the Democrats or the Republicans can say things that, you know, they're just, you know, talking off the top of their head. So I'm for this privacy and this secrecy is bad for the country and both parties and anyone. So I'm for releasing all of this stuff right, you know, immediately. There's one of the lower level, officers there at the Justice Department has sent over a letter to the White House that they believe that a release of this memo would be very dangerous to our security or something. But as I understand it now,
it was
what's that?
Was there a sample of it at the conservativetreehouse.com?
No, there's not, because what is involved in this four-page FISA memo are a lot. There are secrets. As I understand it, there's no masking in there. There's no redacting in there. So what you have in that memo is you have plain we used to say in the ASA, a plain spoken or plain language or, you know, unencrypted, you know, not deep, you know what I mean? But in this memo, there's nothing that's been redacted nor or masked. The names have not. So when these representatives, and right now the Intelligence Committee has authorized any and all U.S. representatives in the House to be able to go into a special room where it's secure and read this memo. There's been about 200 Republicans read the memo, and there's hardly been any Democrats to read this memo. They're not interested in reading this memo. So that's where we're standing now. So if and when the House Intelligence Committee authorizes that this memo be released to the public, then it goes to the White House. The White House and Trump can say, I don't want it released, or they can say, I want it released or not object to a release of it after 5 days. If the White House after 5 days doesn't object to the release, it goes out to the public. If he objects to it, then it has to be perhaps voted on by the House, or any of the representatives or anyone that I understand can go to the House floor and read it into the congressional record if they wish to. I think a number of years ago, Senator Feinstein did that when she discovered torture and so forth like that was going on. So, I mean, she did the nation a good service there, so I support that. So she did go in and read something like this. Yeah, it was classified. And that there are parts of the memo that are classified. See, that's what we're dealing with now, is that we're dealing with people that have looked at the memo are saying, well, it's very bad what's in there, but I can't say specifically anything about it because it's classified, so that's all I can say. So the people, the 200 representatives that have looked at it so far, many of them are saying that at this point. So it's not likely until the House Committee, Intelligence Committee meets, that we'll see any movement on this. You know what I mean, Charlotte?
Okay, yep.
So that's where we're at on the memo right now. And otherwise, the FBI office in Little Rock opened up an investigation into the Clinton Foundation at this time. And usually your local FBI offices will do all the investigation if there's a question. But right now there's questions. Charles Artell is probably the expert on foundations. And the foundations, when they're chartered by, and this is talking about an IRS foundation, when they're first chartered, they have a mission or a certain scope that they set out in their application to IRS to get tax-free status. Well, the Clinton Foundation set out their mission statement and so forth and so on, but they're way outside. They went way outside that mission statement, and their accounting on their foundation is also in question. So Charles Artel has gone in. He knows the law about foundations, and he seems to be the authority right now. He can be found on Twitter. So he's the man to go in and consult on that. Any questions, he has a site and so forth. And what we're seeing now is we're seeing within the DOJ, Department of Justice, and FBI, some high-level corruption, and they're beginning to get evidence in this respect, just like the evidence that came forward recently on Stroke, Peter Stroke, and Lisa Page. And there's all kinds of other, like Judicial Watch, Charlotte.
Yeah.
They're doing a stand-up job on this. What they're having to do now, and this is against our own government, to get under the Freedom of Information Act, they have to sue those departments to get the information now. They're stonewalling them and not providing them the information in a timely way. And so what Judicial Watch has been doing, they've been doing this, and they've been doing it whether it was they did this when George W. was in too, because I've been watching them for years. But when George W.'s administration was stonewalling them on documents, they had to sue him then. When Obama's administration was stonewalling them in there, they had to sue him. And even some of the holdovers now are denying him, we think, some of the documents for Judicial Watch that's requesting. So that's just another problem of our government being ill-responsive to us and having its own mind, you say. And it's off on, you've got career employees there, right? Civil servants and all that. So they're well in
touch. Yeah, GS.
That's right.
So, GSA, or I forget what they call them. And contractors, you got at least five types of personnel systems, I would imagine.
And they're well entrenched in there, and they're going to do things at their own pace and so forth. And so that's what Judicial Watch has been up against for several years. The characters in here on this, you could say this report, it's Lynch, she's former Attorney General, Obama, Comey. Comey's got real problems in some of his testimony before Congress. He on different days, on the same question, he answered it differently. So there's possibilities of perjury there. There's Sally Yates, that was a holdover in the Justice Department that resisted some of the immigration executive orders that Trump was giving. There's McCabe is in there, Orr, Carlin, Lisa Page, Peter Stroke. There's a Baker in there, Priestup. I mean, it gets really to discuss this. You almost have to have an organizational chart, don't you, Charlotte? Huh?
Yes, and they do. So fear not. If you go to the article that George is referencing, it has many good click-offs and videos and links, and it's very well written.
Now,
theconservativetreehouse.com.
Right. What we have is that there may be a stand-up patriot in this, and Mike Rogers, okay, figures prominently in here. NSA Director, Admiral Rogers. And what he did was he conducted a full FISA audit, okay? And what was happening was that when you have a database like that has, a lot of secure classified documents in it, you have certain rules about who can get in there, but also you have certain rules about the different areas within that database they can get into. And the problem with this is, this is what William Binney said the other day, is that the NSA has about 80 sites in the country where they are pulling information from digital streams, okay, from infrastructure streams, whether telephone and so forth. And so about 11 of those sites are foreign, are coming in from foreign infrastructure. So the NSA in the past has always had a foreign interest, or their mission was to surveil, to intercept foreign communications and to report back to the CIA any problems that they have found if they get them right there on the fly, see. But they never had a domestic, mission. But now they do because
are
of
we,
all...
forgive me for interrupting, but are we talking espionage and such?
Well,
not really?
Well, the FBI has the authority within the country, okay? The FBI goes in frequently to the FISA court and requests, you could say, wiretapping is the old name for this, okay?
Mm.
It's more going through the database. See, NSA is collecting everything now, okay? Domestic or foreign, okay? So it's right now, it's more getting permission from the FISA court to query the NSA database, okay? Now, the Department of Justice has to go in, and also the FBI have to go in with requests to the FISA court if they want to do this properly, okay? And when they come, and most of the time they get the permission, okay? Some of the critics of the FISA court say it's a rubber stamping that has occurred now, okay? To where it used to be, where they really scrutinized these requests. Now, in the last few years, they've just been giving anyone and everybody permission to do that, okay? And you brought up an interesting question on 9/11 on the first hour. See, what happened on 9/11 was they got the whole country in a different mindset. And so we've been progressing to a greater and greater degree of a national security state. And that's the danger that we're seeing. The only person in Congress, or one of the few people in the Senate, is Rand Paul that stands up against this. And I think on this last renewal of that act, of the FISA act that just passed Congress, I think he put some amendments in there to help protect the domestic collection and dissemination of the domestic information on U.S. citizens. So, but Rand Paul is one of the few people in Congress that really stands up on this, and I admire and respect him for that.
Yeah, we got to send more people like that to Congress. And
that's right. Yeah.
And the other thing is, how long did they approve it for? Was it 6 years, open-ended, or 6 years?
It was something like that.
Do you recall?
Yeah, it was something like that. But I mean, it's the problem here is that 9/11 still has questions. We have questions about that. But the overall public the public in general is still accepting, is in acceptance of the government story on that. Okay? So you're not going to get anywhere with this, and this ensures that our leaders will be able to get even more and more stringent security controls. And that's basically the way we're progressing in the country, is towards a greater and greater national security state, which means that we are going to be surveilled more, listened to more, we have to get permission to travel maybe in the future more, and all this. And this is what I stand adamantly against. And so that's the danger, see. And then now you were talking about a new law, that's on before Congress. I think it's in committee still, isn't it?
No, which, I'm sorry, what are we addressing?
Yeah, there was a bill about releasing all the 9/11 information about 9/11.
Oh, that one. Sorry, I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah, but I think, Charlotte, after reading that and looking at the status of it, it's in committee still. It's not out of committee to be voted on by the House or the Senate, see.
We still have out there, 25 architects and engineers, 2,500 architects and engineers.
Right, right. Well, now there's a conflict, see, that's
not a small amount.
Now, we've interviewed, what's her name out of Boulder City, Boulder, Colorado, I'll think of her name, the woman that wrote the articles about the psychology of 9/11. You know that?
Oh, right. Yeah, I can't recall her name, George. You know I'm not the name one.
But anyway, she wrote an amazing collection of about 20 articles on different ways that people are denying it or not wanting to look at it and so forth about 9/11. And so we've done that. We replayed it recently in the last week or two, a couple of weeks, two or three weeks.
I've lost faith in the media through that.
What's that?
Mm-hmm. And that was when we started to see the loss. That's when you could see through the media. For example, when Popular Science magazine went up against good expert advice, and then testing, you know, they just failed miserably. Popular Science, that was this great sad moment in our history.
Well, that's the problem with this, is that you and I go back in broadcasting over 11 years. And so we talked to some of the top people, and we've also been to some 9/11 conferences throughout the country. And we did a video stream from the New York one. What was that, 2010? Is that right?
It sounds about right. Yeah, that was a great one.
You were running downstairs and running cables everywhere, and trying to take care of Luke Rakowski and his needs. And then we were in the All Souls Church. Remember that? Yeah.
That was a beautiful structure. It was a beautiful building.
But who was there but Anthony, Anthony Schaefer was there, remember? And he's become very prominent on Twitter and also on Facebook. And he's tied into some National Security Foundation, one of them out of London. But also, I think he's retired now, but they have him comment on some of these talk shows quite often on security matters, and he's awful good. You know what I mean? And he's moderate in his view. He's on the Patriot side, but he tells the truth. If you know what I'm saying, he doesn't lie about things and so forth. So overall, I respect the man immensely. But
do you think we're going to be seeing a lot of indictments back to the Department of Justice, FBI, the memo, ongoing problems of corruption that have been revealed that we have just touched the surface of? We didn't even dig into it, George.
Okay, let me tell you something. I didn't put up any Larry Fink clips on our program the first hour on Davos. Larry Fink was there, okay? There were 1,000 jets, corporate jets there. Most of them were in the Zurich and other airfields around the Zurich area, okay? But Larry Fink was there representing BlackRock Investment Company, okay? And they invest, someone said it's $6 trillion now, okay? They have under investment between $4.5 trillion and $6 trillion. It depends on how the stock market has made a big run up of 40% since Trump went in, see? So that's a big, big plus for BlackRock, who invests heavily in the market. But BlackRock, the biggest investment firm in the country, in the world, you could say, was behind Hillary. So the big money, the Rothschild money, the Rockefeller money, all of that, they were behind Hillary. In fact, there are emails with her talking to one of the Rothschild wives, you know, about having let her down or something, and she was sorry about it. You know what I mean? So they're all, this big money, you know, communities all in bed together. So the biggest money in the world in this country and Europe, in London and all this, were decidedly supporting Hillary. Okay? Now, the reason why Hillary did not win would be many reasons. But one of the reasons that was the most likely that I heard from Roger Stone was that, and in his book, we interviewed him a while back, about a year ago, was he said there was a consultant there, okay, in the campaign for Trump. His name is Fabrizio, I believe. Italian guy, you know, but he was sharp as a tack. And he advised Trump over the last two or three weeks of the campaign to concentrate in the Midwest, specifically Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota. Minnesota was not as feasible to gain. But Wisconsin, Michigan, western part of Pennsylvania, and different areas, that coupled with a win in Florida would give him, according to Fabrizio, the Electoral College vote that he needed. And that's really what happened. Those states came in for Trump, and that gave him, that pushed him over the barrier to acquire the electoral votes that he needed to win the election. I don't even think Trump was, you know, very optimistic about his chances to win. And everybody had their money on Hillary. And so it was a big disappointing thing for all the people that had contributed to her campaign and so forth. So we have Trump coming in, perhaps as surprise winner. And then the first day, he signs executive order that cancels out the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. Well, the very people that were in Davos are the people that were pushing the TPP. And I'll tell you why. The TPP had built into it draconian language and agreements, trade agreements, between those member countries that would override constitutional legacy law. And this is where Trump would not put up with that. So the first day, right after the inauguration, he went to the White House. He signed an executive order, because I saw it, that canceled the TPP, and we did not want that. The TPP represented those international corporations. It also specifically represented the pharmaceuticals. And you know what they've done with all their health care advice. And also, it gave a greater power to copyright, trademark holders, and things, intellectual property is what it was about, too. And what has happened in this country is the five major media corporations and conglomerates have gobbled up over 500 companies holding patents and trademark and copyright properties, intellectual properties. Now the Chinese are coming in from a different angle. The Chinese are putting on the books more patents and so forth than all the other Western countries together. Okay, so the Chinese are working out there getting patents on new devices and new breakthroughs, and while we're sitting here not, you know, getting nearly the number of patents that we should be. But that's just an angle that came up out of the Davos meeting that they were talking on these different panel discussions that I picked up at the Davos meeting. So the Chinese are very aggressive. They're very, very repressive internally within China. And
that means they're wanting to close their market off.
Yeah. What's that?
In my mind. And they want to close their market off. That's real interesting, George.
Well, what I'm saying is that we, way back, and I think I did this on one of my other programs, World Review Commentary with Wei Xinjiang. And Wei Xinjiang is one of my heroes. He spent 18 years in Chinese prisons as a political prisoner. And of all people that got him out, Bill Clinton got him out, Charlotte. Isn't that ironic, huh? But he did.
No one's 100% good, bad, right, or wrong. So,
well, I'll give Bill Clinton a positive on that one. You know what I mean? Otherwise, he didn't, you know. But anyway, Wei Xinjiang came out of China and has been in Washington, D.C. with the Wei Xinjiang Foundation working to further democracy in China. And so, but he knows the Chinese, having spent that much time in Chinese prisons. There's a little question one time I asked him, okay? We were talking, and through his interpreter, because he was speaking Chinese, I asked a question to Wei Xinjiang. I said, it came up during the discussion, I read his book, that he spent 5 years in solitary confinement, okay, of the 18 years. And I questioned him. I said, Wei Xinjiang, I said, what kept you going during that 5 year period, okay, when you were in solitary confinement? Well, I expected, you know, a belief in God, and, you know, God was my, you know, savior and, you know, liberator, and that's, you know, my foundation, my rock, you know, whatever, or Jesus or whatever. But his answer was really, really different. And you know what he said, Charlotte?
You know what?
He said, I'm a very patient man.
So, I'm a very patient man.
Yeah, and Si Ping Wong was his translator, right-hand lady. She laughed, Wei Xinjiang laughed, and we all laughed together. And because everybody knew that was, yeah, it was just unexpected, you know, answer. But Wei Xinjiang is a fine person. He received most of the Sakharov Awards, most of the international awards for peace and liberty and so forth. He hasn't received a Nobel Peace Prize, which he should have by now, but he, you know, that thing has got so political, you know, over there sometimes. But Helen Caldicott's group, well, a group that she worked with, received the Nobel Peace Prize this last go-around, okay?
Okay.
And that was a legitimate award. And they were, you know, against nuclear arms and weapons and nuclear power, you know what I mean? So that was a very, very respectable win for that group. But anyway, getting back to what's going on in this country today is that the left is against the right, the Democrats against the Republicans. We're all being used and manipulated by the top insiders of both parties. But especially the media has been manipulating to a great extent, you know, all kinds of propaganda out there. And, you know, some of the interviews that we aired today on that first hour, one of them was the guy, he said, you got to have trust to be in the media business, right? And that's what the mainstream media has lost. They've lost the public trust, the American trust. And so
after 9/11, what do you expect?
and who was in office? Who was FBI?
We had the rise of the alternative media. I mean, it was a real phenomenon. Now alternative media is discredited today, but
no, they're not.
Or whatever.
They're not within the followers of Trump.
What I mean is the term itself. No, I'm all for the alternative media that I see blossoming around me. No. I'm being misunderstood. I'm sorry. I just mean the word itself, you know, is falling out of fashion.
Yeah, well, we had one guy there that testified about fake news. I did a small video on this a number of months ago or a year or so ago, and basically, the idea of fake news, okay, was a mechanism and a tool to be placed upon the alternative press to discredit them. That's basically what the dynamics of this fake news dynamic has been, okay? And they'll say conspiracy nuts, they'll say fake news, they'll say all that in one breath, see what I mean? But they know that the jig is up now, and you know who they have, because Davos is a big money, conference, the World Economic Forum. Well, they had the New York Times there, and all the big dogs were there, see. And they're the ones putting out the fake news today, not us. We're trying to establish some even-handed balance here. And we know the problem. When you study this problem like we have, and I've been at it for 35 years, you know what's going on. And what's going on is not good for the country. It's not good for the Democrats. It's not good for the Republicans. It's not good for the left. It's not good for the right. They're just using everybody.
And we have this phenomena of challenge of technology, you know?
Yeah, right. Now that the rise of the high tech there, and what happened is that they're, like Facebook has these new algorithms in there, and they're spotting what they consider to be fake news or bad people or whatever, and they're censoring by keeping those people isolated. See what I mean? And that's what's been going on Facebook. You know, they're the ones that are going to make the decision. Now we get back to net neutrality, okay? And that is a ball of a snake pit itself, because it's the problem with this thing is that before early on, okay, the internet was working probably better than it ever did since then. Okay, people could go on there and express opinions and so forth. There wasn't anything called fake news at the time or anything else, and you could read. I remember reading on Prodigy their postings. We called them postings that were put up all the time. And so I'd go in there and read these postings, and the free flow of information and so forth was great. See what I mean? And then we had this confrontation between the left and the right and the mainstream media, and who really heightened the confrontation was Trump, see? He pointed out some of the real problems. And if you'll go back and review his announcement coming down that escalator with his daughter, Ivanka, and the statement that he made, he made a statement about immigration coming in, but he said there were some good people too. What the press did is they forgot about what he said about there being good people too coming in, left that out, concentrated, made him into a racist or into a bigot and all that. And they started that immediately. And then there.
Yeah, well, you know, I want to say something. I think Rand Paul walks on water to a certain degree. You know, I like the apple doesn't fall far from the Ron Paul tree.
Yeah.
But I will say this. I saw him in an old interview with some colleagues of his, and he was derogatory towards Trump.
I thought
that was interesting.
Well, now here's...
Or he put it out there to, like, we all know who we're talking about, but I'm not going to name names.
Okay.
And I thought, my gosh, this was back in 2015.
Let me tell you the way I see those two, Hillary and Trump, okay? Trump has had ethical problems in his business dealings in the past, okay? And if you look over here at this Hillary side of things, she's got some real criminal problems there that are beginning to be very
evident. I'd rather have the civil lawsuits than the criminal deaths
There was a book written about some of the problems that Trump had, and he did commit some ethical violations. Okay, so he's not lily white either. If you look over here on the other side of the ledger on Hillary, they've got all kinds of infractions of all kinds, and so one guy that was testifying in Britain at a big conference the other day over there about the reasons why Trump won said that when she used that word deplorable, you know, the deplorables, well, then many people out there felt like she was speaking down to them. And some of my friends that were Democrats voted for Trump came over because of things like that. See what I mean? They just didn't like this condescending attitude that she exuded, you know. And so there's a plethora of differing reasons why she didn't win, see. You can't say it's just one thing, but it's a collection of different things that occurred where she was denied the...
I know for me, I did a Hail Mary pass to the universe. I was like, all right, Trump, American. At least I know you're all American.
Yeah, right. I mean, just what's coming out now, but we've still got this division in Congress, see. When most of the congressional members won't look at that memo at all, that tells you something right there. They're drawing lines on party lines, and they don't care about the truth, so the country loses. Now, this happens to be on a positive, for the Republicans. So they're wanting to, motivate everybody to go out there and look at this and release it and everything else. But the Democrats should go over there and look at it, and they're not. That's disappointing, see. Okay? It's become very,
well, how
very
can we
partisan.
How can we compel them? Is there any way the American people can say, go do your homework,
get in there
and do your obligation?
Well, let's put it this way. We need the public to come in on this. Let the public view this documents and see what they think about it. Okay?
I don't know. I'm a little worried things might spiral. I don't want anybody to have any knee-jerk reactions to information that, should not be in the public domain. I don't know, I'm all for... I don't know, George.
The deep state is trying to forestall this disclosure of these documents. The same people that BlackRock is involved with. BlackRock got $6 trillion, Charlotte, not billion, under management. This is a big money power system. You know what I mean? Love of mammon, worship of mammon, like the Bible says. If you, look at that angle, that explanation. But what's happened from when modern banking began to take hold in Italy, in Venice, and then spread throughout the mainland part of Europe and into UK, and all these banks started organizing into eventually fractional banking systems and central banks. What they don't tell you at Davos is the central banks are privately owned. See what I mean? Like our Fed, see? So the Davos people are just pulling wool over the public's eyes in general and trying to put forward some very benevolent, altruistic work, See what I mean?
I know, and things seem to be evolving fast with these criminal proceedings that are going to probably go before the American people, I hope.
Well, let the American public decide these issues then. Put the information out there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Follow Judicial Watch, for goodness sakes. It deserves our attention. It's very important.
Well, I interviewed the original guy that founded that, okay? Larry Klayman, okay? And Larry Klayman had a bone to pick with a guy with Fenton, Tom Fenton now. See? He figures he pushed him out of Judicial Watch. So Larry Klayman is saying that Tom Fenton, his ambition, pushed Larry Klayman, who founded Judicial Watch, out of the organization. See? So,
okay, well, but, I don't have all the inside knowledge, but I know they're trying to do the right thing by the American people right now.
Yeah, and all I know is they're going in, filing lawsuit after lawsuit, and forcing the government to give them documents they should have gotten through Freedom of Information, request. See what I mean? I know that. So Judicial Watch, to me, is doing some good work, you know what I mean? I mean, Larry Klayman was in there, too, so he earlier on did good work, too. But his work is not, emphasized anymore. But they have been against both parties. They have gone against both parties. So you have to, give them that much,
Can I get a time check from you about how we coming along?
Yeah.
Well,
we've got about seven more minutes to go to the end of the program.
Okay, I'm curious. I felt like it was coming up, but I just felt like it was upon me.
And so, do you have anything to say? Or did you have
I'm listening intently, and it's great. I'm learning a lot. Thank you.
Well, the dynamics in this country are in such a state, especially the political dynamics, are in such a state of disarray, disorder, and hate-filled and resentment-filled that it has widen the gap between the left and the right, Democrats and the Republicans. And I don't see an easy healing taking place, because Trump is an authoritarian person. See what I mean? So he's provocative at times. See what I mean? And so the left finds it very easily, the mainstream media, to come in there and clobber him when he pops off. You know what I mean? Yeah. Do you know the word pop off, Charlotte? You know what that means?
Generally, yeah.
When we were in school, way back in middle, it wasn't middle school then, we called it junior high school. In the rock and roll area at the beginning, we'd be talking together with some other friends, and then somebody would come up and they would just say something offhanded, and we call that popping off. See what I mean? Now Trump.
Okay, gotcha.
Trump has a tendency to pop off at times. See what I mean? But he doesn't know, not to do that because of his ego, say. And so that's the trouble with Trump, is that he's involved too much with his ego, see.
Well, his personality thing, that's all fine and dandy. As long as, there was something like, 125 national security breaches in the first 126 days of his administration?
Yeah.
Or something crazy. Did you hear that one?
What was that now?
Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
Yeah, Gorka. Good. He's good. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So he came out of the White House, and he was, very pro-American, very, very fascinating interview at Judicial Watch, but at any rate.
Yeah, he appears quite frequently on Sean Hannity's program. He's on there 3 or 4 or 5 times a week. He's testifying on these different angles, the legal angles and the political angles of what's going on. He was in the White House and he did his service. He's a good guy. He's a good person. Okay.
It was plain spoken, frankly. He was sitting with panelists and the other panelists. It was very difficult to follow him, but yeah. I could follow Dr. Sebastian Gorka quite well. I'm like, okay, he's got his bottom line up front, and he was there with the information, what he wanted to convey, and I think he was a little insightful and self-serving and really what I expected, frankly.
Okay. But he's an honest guy. I like him. See what I mean?
I like him too.
He says that he's very frank about things and very firm about his beliefs and what his opinions are. There's nothing wrong with that, But we've got a hell of a damn mess in the country, and I just don't know how it's going to be resolved. You know what I mean?
No, I don't think anybody. At this point, we need to look at the good Americans with the white hats that, you know what their jobs are. And all of us entrepreneurs, frankly, George, all this is with Trump talking at Davos, it's inflamed my own entrepreneurial spirit, you know. What I could do yet.
Yeah, what I didn't say earlier in the first hour was, They were warm to him because he's beginning to turn around the world economy of which they're part of. Okay? They have world interest. They're transnational in interest. And so he's beginning to energize the world economy again, and this is what they needed to bring Europe out of the doldrums. See what I mean? And so there was a mixed bag, see, of people over there. Okay? And but he's their hope now because they sat around one table there on Thursday night, and he had some of the leading business chief executive officers in the world sitting around having dinner there. And after dinner, they sat around and told him what they're going to do for America. He's got them dancing to his tune. You know what I mean? But dancing to his tune is helpful for, and will make them be and see. You see what I'm saying? So they're all
all win together.
Yeah, we're all going to, I mean, they're all going to, but we still need jobs, you know, so I can't deny, you know.
I would say we need to focus, if any incoming entrepreneurs want to put their mind to the task of, you know, rejuvenating and putting our money where our mouth is, where the community colleges are concerned.
That was a good point to make. Even the top genie there, top of IBM, said that not everybody should have a high degree or advanced degrees. She said that herself. See what I mean? So she knows that there's a need for workers and inventors and all kinds of people out there that are going to. There's new machines, these 3D machines and all that are opening up all kinds of possibilities for people to make their own devices and stuff. See. Invent their device, make their device, patent their device, and sell their device. See what I mean? So
right, and then we're fast moving. Where's our patent office now? And I would say release all the high technology that they're holding back. You know, if you follow some people, there's a lot of claims that, you know, our government could be more forthcoming with advanced technology.
Exactly. Well, there was one person in there, if you remember, that talked about AI being a community property. Community rights, see what I mean? The commons, you know what I mean? So that's the real collective idea there, to the extreme.
AI thing, AI can never suffer. I really think that's going to be a difficult thing to, I mean, it's intuitive, but it's, you know, how can AI suffer? I don't understand how anything could come close to what we have to, you know.
We've got
to get out of it.
Yeah, we've got about 35 or 40 seconds left, so I want to thank everybody for listening out there, and I want to thank you for all your efforts over the years, Charlotte.
No, thank you, George. Thanks for including me. I really appreciate it. I had a great time.
Anyway, this second hour will be up running after the second, after the first hour, and we want to thank everybody out there for supporting us, and God bless everybody, and we've got to get America back to work again. And good jobs, as high pay as we can get. Okay? Thank you, Charlotte.
Thank you, George. Bye-bye.
Good night.